Greg DeMarco Show.
There's a lot of things I like, and I like the Greg DeMarco Show.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Really?
This is Leanne Marie, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
We all love Greg DeMarco.
Really?
I like Greg DeMarco.
Sometimes at night, we spoon.
Anybody got time for that?
No, Greg. No, Greg. I'm serious. I love you.
Don't do it like that, baby.
Patrick, is someone tuckered out? Someone sneaky? You gotta go to bed, huh?
Damn!
We all love Greg DeMarco.
Say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Oh, you guys are so adorable.
That's going to be a soundbite right there.
Shut up!
There we go. That is the beginning of the show. Hopefully you enjoy our show opening. New show opening will be coming to begin 2018. However, this is the Greg DeMarco Show. We welcome you in. My name, of course, is Greg DeMarco, at GregDeMarco411 on the Twitter, because I keep meaning to change it and have not changed it yet, but I will do so, and we'll let you know when I do. And we here on this show have but one mission, and that is, of course, we are here to help you enjoy wrestling more. If you've been listening, you know I kind of fancy myself as the King Solomon of the internet wrestling community, but I do not do this alone. Oh, no. This is the Greg DeMarco Show with Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd, and that, of course, means that we welcome in my tag team partner, my best friend, the wrestling realist himself, at Wrestling Realist on the Twitter. That's WRESTLNG Realist. He is the Bam Bam Bigelow to my Lawrence Taylor, Patrick O'Dowd.
Hall of Fame credentials, maybe.
That's right. Well, we'll see.
Possibly.
Word on the street.
Word on the street.
That's right. Hopefully our listeners get the reference. That's all I'm going to say, because they should. Most of them should get the reference.
I would hope so.
If they don't, I mean, if you don't, okay, you probably have the WWE Network. Just go pull up WrestleMania, I believe it's 11, and check out the check out the main event. That's all we got to do. And yeah, some other stuff too, but check out the main event.
That's Bam Bam Bigelow to my Lawrence Taylor.
That's right.
That's solid.
Yeah, I'm good at this. I got a whole list. I made a list. I don't know what to do with it, but I have a list. And I usually just come up with it driving home earlier in the day on Tuesday. So
you do what you got to do.
That's what I do. Exciting development this week, Patrick O'Dowd. We are going to be debuting a brand new segment. A segment, by the way, listeners, Patrick O'Dowd has absolutely no clue what it is. None.
No idea.
None whatsoever.
Nope, zero.
I'm excited. I wanted to debut this like 2 weeks ago, but I wasn't able to make it. Has its own opening and closing, and it's very important stuff. It's the kind of analysis that we can only bring you here on the Greg DeMarco Show. It's going to be very, very important. Now, we will get there. Of course, this show is now an extension of our website, thechairshot.com, where we give you the type of analysis and news and reviews and opinions that are real. And basically, they fit in with our moniker, always use your head. So we expect you to be smart. We expect you to be that type of wrestling fan who either gets it or hopes to get it or thinks you get it, and maybe after reading the website long enough, you actually will get it. We'll see what happens. But that's where we're coming at it from. And this week, I want to kick things off, Patrick, by talking about the main event of WWE Clash of Champions, the match that thankfully did go on last, as a lot of people were concerned, and that was AJ Styles defending his WWE Championship against Jinder Mahal. And what did you think of this match? Let's start there.
I thought it was a very good match. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think that it's interesting that once again, when I read the internet, it's always this belief that basically AJ Styles carried Jinder, and that's the only reason it was a good match. And I think that's grossly unfair to Jinder. But I thought that it did no harm to Jinder Mahal as a legitimate contender. The finish came out of nowhere, and wasn't really like, you know, he got dominated by AJ Styles. So I think I saw somebody post on Twitter asking the question of whether or not this would be the last time we'd see Jinder Mahal in a world title match. And I just think that that's silly to even tweet and ask, because I think we know that that's going to happen. So, you know, a little bit of crazy talk there. I have not read this article that I know exists on thechairshot.com about how great the match was. But I know the guy who wrote it, and I'm assuming he's got some. I'm assuming he's got some thoughts. But no, I thought it was a very solid main event. I thought it was a very good match. I thought it did well for both guys, and told a pretty good story. And you know, I didn't expect Jinder to win. He didn't, but he didn't lose in such a way to where I was like, well, damn, that's it for Jinder Mahal.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to the DWI podcast, which is, of course, one of our podcasts on the Chair Shot, and they were doing their preview. I wasn't on this episode, but they were talking about this match, and they talked about the fact that, you know, the Jinder wasn't going to win, much to my dismay. And I'm thinking, I actually didn't pick Jinder to win. I didn't think Jinder should win. I thought that right now the best thing for him was for AJ to keep the title, and that's the best thing for the title at this point. And I didn't think Jinder was going to win. I know a lot of people did, and a lot of people were upset that it was the main event because they thought Jinder was going to win. And I love the match. I watching it, I was like, you know, as it started going, you realize, damn, this is a really good match, because the biggest thing for me about this match is that it played to both guys' strengths. And people ask the question, Patrick or Dowd, what does Jinder do well? Because everybody kind of has their thing that everyone does well. Not everybody is AJ Styles, or they're pretty much the greatest all-around in-ring performer in the world right now, and that's AJ Styles, in my opinion. Despite my love for Cesaro, I think AJ is just a little bit better right now at 40 years old, and he's doing amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Jinder, to me, showed his biggest strength, and that's ring awareness, in my opinion, of Jinder Mahal. Like, he uses the ring so well. And I need to go back and watch, and I don't know if this is a new thing or if this has been Jinder all along, and I just haven't pinpointed it until now, because he used the ring so much during this match and used it against AJ Styles, everything from his positioning to getting out of the ring to you know, foiling AJ's plans at different points, and it really was well done in that regard. Plus, it was your typical setup where AJ got off to a hot start, Jinder cuts him off, and then it's just heat all over AJ for a long time before the comeback, and Jinder just did a really good job. And I know, so I saw some complaints on Twitter about the slow and methodical pace of the match, but and they blame Jinder. And is that Jinder, Patrick Cordata, or is that the WWE main event style that we hear so much about?
Yes. And I think, again, I even said it, it's grossly unfair to Jinder Mahal. Like, this is the problem that I have with a lot of fans on the interwebs, is that their guy can never be part of what went wrong
mm-hmm.
with the match, in their opinion. And
right.
So, for some reason, because the match was too slow for their liking, it had to be Jinder's fault. And
right.
that's bizarre to me, because there are two men working in that ring. And you can't tell me that those two men didn't, you know, with their road agent, go over the match, discuss how they were going to work the match, and then go out there and work the match. Like, that's insane. And so to act like it's Jinder's fault, or to be like Jinder can't work that fast, is insane and stupid, and it's willfully ignoring how wrestling works. And that it really is, like, I don't know how much we can stress to people over and over and over again when they watch a match, that it is two people working in concert with each other and working well together. And when matches go south, a lot of times it's because they are not working well together as a team
right.
and putting together a good match. These two guys were working together well as a team, putting together a match in a style that they agreed upon, in working with how they wanted to do the pacing of the match, how they want the story they wanted to tell with the agent, and following through on it. And so to say that it's just gender is stupid, and I don't have time for you.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is stupid. It's so we decided we wanted to hate gender, not we, you and I, obviously, but we,
yep.
The idiots, decided they wanted to hate gender and decided that they were not going to like whatever he did in this match. And this is the thing, like, AJ didn't carry gender. The two men together put on a great match. And
yes. That's
the way it should be in a main event. A main event should not have to be carried. And it's so funny. I really wish the IWC was around when, like, Hogan was champion. Or the Ultimate Warrior was champion. Because let's be honest, he wasn't that good. And he was not an in-ring technician whatsoever. And talk about being carried. Poor Ravishing Rick Rude had to carry the Ultimate Warrior through multiple feuds and multiple main event matches. And so to sit here and Jinder Mahal was not carried at all in this match. He was AJ's equal and was portrayed as AJ's equal throughout the match. Both men worked the body part throughout the whole match. Jinder worked AJ's ribs the whole time. AJ worked the leg, and it factored into the finish. And AJ, you know, used the calf crusher and got the tap out finish, which to me kind of puts a bow on the whole thing and takes Jinder out of the title picture for now, which is fine. I have no problem with Jinder being taken out of the title picture right now. But Jinder didn't like tap out right away. Jinder got to the ropes, and right before he was there, AJ grabbed him, rolled him over back to the center of the ring, just like Kurt Angle used to do with the ankle lock.
Yep.
He'd pull you to the center of the ring, and then he would drop down and grapevine the legs. And this is, you know, and the calf crusher is basically AJ's version of the ankle lock at this point. And
yep.
It was the perfect way to cap off the match. AJ had to overcome the Singh brothers, which he did very well, and
yep.
It played into Jinder's advantage. AJ even got the kick out of a super finisher during this match.
That's true, yeah.
You know, where he did the Colossus off the ropes. And Jinder, you know, AJ was you could almost complain about that. Like no one gets the kick out of the F5, but AJ got the kick out of a super finisher for Jinder Mahal. And I'm not saying we should go down that rabbit hole and complain about that at all. But it's just so interesting that people don't want to credit Jinder Mahal when, and I've seen some people say, this is the best match Jinder's ever had, and they immediately go to AJ Styles. Well, obviously he was working with AJ Styles. If a guy works with AJ Styles and isn't any good, don't you think we could still tell?
Yes. Yeah, and without a heartbeat, you know, without blinking twice.
Yeah.
Again, like, when somebody's not good, and you know, if you want to look at it, a prime example of that, look at, you know, what was it, 19, 20-year-old Randy Orton when he was Raw, and you could tell. Like, and it didn't matter who he worked with. Like, he was Raw, and you could tell. It's funny that people think that this business, like, this is the only business where, like, somebody, a good hand can help minimize, you know, somebody's, you know, talent or lack thereof, but you can't make it go away. You can't hide it. You can't hide that, you know, inexperience or when somebody's green. But yeah, I think that it's like we talk about all the time when you talk about, like, playlists and you talk about this mentality. You want to believe something is real. Like, oh, say Roman Reigns is a bad wrestler. And so you tell yourself that no matter what that person does within that match, it's never as a result of the person you dislike being in the match, like, because they can't possibly be any good. And so whether it's Jinder Mahal, Roman Reigns, John Cena before them, Randy Orton before them, you know, people.
So many people.
We're just going to make it. We're going to try to make up our own narrative. We're going to live with that narrative, and we're going to ignore. What is it? What's the word? Reality. We're just
going to
ignore reality.
It reminds me when Sting was in TNA, back towards the end of his TNA run, and he was better than you thought he would be, but he wasn't nearly as good as people said he was, and they weren't willing to admit it because it was Sting. And it's kind of the opposite with Jinder. Like, they don't want to admit that he's doing well because it's Jinder. And same thing with Roman Reigns. Same thing with John Cena many years ago. Now, of course, it's cool to love John Cena again. Basically, ever since CM Punk left, it was cool to like John Cena is what happened. And I noticed, if you kind of look at the timeline. But you go back and look at, like, a young Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes, when he first started in WWE, very little experience, looked green. Like, you could tell they put him with Hardcore Holly for a reason. and that's why they were a tag team. You know, Drew McIntyre's first run versus Drew McIntyre's run now, very different.
Oh.
You know,
yep.
And even Andrade Cien Almas, it was not that good. And Triple H even said so in an interview, like, he wasn't doing well when he first came out there, and he had this pressure on him throwing himself, and once they gave him Zelina Vega, like, he took off in the ring, even though she wasn't in the ring with him. It just took this pressure off of him, and now he's an amazing performer in the ring. And it's just, you know, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is people use Jinder's push or former, not push, the way he was booked before being WWE champion against him.
Yes,
and,
yes, very
and
much
they
so.
Put the fact that he
Absolutely.
Was booked as a jobber against him, and it's interesting because it doesn't mean he was a bad performer. It's just the way they
used
100%. Him. I think that's what I'm seeing now is that Jinder as a performer was always good, just wasn't used well.
Yeah, well, and maybe not used well isn't exactly the way that I would describe it. Sometimes it's just I'm trying to think. That old saying of creative has nothing for you. Like, you know, this guy looks good. He made himself look better, you know, to get himself into this position for this run. But all it takes is one, you know, sort of good moment at, oh, say, I don't know, a WrestleMania, to give yourself an opportunity to kind of move forward with for it. And, you know, people, hey, I think you're right. I think that, you know, people act as if they want, you know, some of these job, you know, quote unquote jobbers or enhancement talent or whatever you want to call it, that they want these guys that they feel to move up, but then they don't actually see them that way. Like, there's a reason that, you know, there wasn't truly a clamoring for, you know, Barry Horowitz to win a title, for example. And it is, like, once you've made up your mind that someone is who they are, then it takes a lot of work for people to be like, okay, I can come around on this guy.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think people will eventually come around on Jinder. I'm a little biased because,
sure.
You know, I've been in on him since WrestleMania.
Yep.
But I want to go back to something because when Jinder got his push to the world title, what was the reason that Jinder got his push to the world title? What's the reason that was reported everywhere and is still quoted today?
Oh, geez. You're going to – honest to God, I have been sleeping since then, Greg. Why are you doing this to me?
It's okay. India. India was the
reason
that everyone gets.
Yeah, you're right.
We're only pushing Jinder because of India. We want to capture the Indian market, and then Jinder's not capturing India the way they want, this and that. I got to be honest. I mentioned this in the article that you referred to. I don't think they did this because of India.
I don't think so either.
They need to create a new star, and they saw what Jinder did at WrestleMania, and they were like, hey, let's give this guy a shot and see if we can create a new star. And much to the dismay of the IWC, it worked. Like Jinder is a star now.
Well, I think that actually goes back to that idea that they don't like to believe that the WWE can create a star.
Right.
They, you know, there is that belief that, you know, the wrestlers are the stars are created by the fans. You know, because they helped rebook Daniel Bryan's WrestleMania run. You know that, right?
Of course they did.
Like,
oh, yeah. Yes.
They're the reason he won the world title.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
it's
was there.
It's funny that you say that. Yeah, it's funny that you say that they're the reason. That you were at one of those shows, weren't you? Wasn't there a show along the way that you were at for the build of that?
I think there was either a SmackDown or Raw or something along that way.
Yeah, that you were a part of. Oh, it's fun to say you were a part of it, even though you were just sitting in the crowd. But it's, you know, you were a part of it.
It's a shared experience, yo.
Exactly. No, 100%. I understand completely. But, I almost forgot where I was going, but now I do know. It's funny because did the fans get, you know, build stars out of Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns?
No.
No. The fact that they were handed the greatest gimmick possible at that time.
Yeah.
Like to be given the Shield was any three guys who could work a little bit and have a good look and can walk down to cool music would have been crazy over because of the Shield. And they could have debuted Seth Rollins as a jobber for years, like Jinder Mahal. And then when we pushed Seth Rollins, people would have gone nuts because we love Seth Rollins. He was a Ring of Honor world champion. No one would have complained that he was a jobber for years. And yeah. But he got a primo spot. All three members of the Shield were given a were handed on a silver platter a primo spot. Now they were given that because the WWE thought they could handle it, and they proved they could. But let me say Dean Ambrose sucked, and Dean Ambrose came out and was the drizzling shits. A month later, there would have been a different third member of the Shield.
Yeah,
and they would have changed things around.
That doesn't stand. Like they don't let things stand. You're absolutely right there.
And the same, like if Jinder was the drizzling shits, he wouldn't have been world champion. And I still say it, he grabbed the brass ring at WrestleMania, and that's where he is today. He's not going anywhere. I stand by my prediction, Patrick O'Dowd. The John Cena match at WrestleMania will belong to Jinder Mahal, in my opinion.
I think that's a very solid prediction.
That's right. And then you can remind everyone that I said it before SummerSlam. Same with Nakamura versus Styles taking place at WrestleMania. So anything else that you want to say about this match before we move on to a different topic? Same card, different topic.
I don't know that I have anything else to say about the match. I am interested to see what happens with Jinder Mahal now. Like, you know, does he go away for a little while? How do we navigate that before he does come back? Because I think there's actually an argument for him to quietly go away for a little bit.
Yeah, well, he wrestled on Tuesday Night SmackDown.
He did.
He's in the main
event
on Tuesday Night SmackDown. Six-man tag.
But,
no, I agree.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's what I'm intrigued to see where he goes.
I think he's in the final two of the Royal Rumble with Shinsuke Nakamura. Maybe
you
final
think so?
Three because Finn Balor. I could see Finn Balor in there. But yeah, I think he's going to have a good run and be in the. Where I don't know if he'll come in early, but I think at the end of the Rumble, I think he's going to be there. I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's going to walk away with the victory and go to WrestleMania in that regard, but I do think that that he's going to be in the final group there at the Royal Rumble. I will say this: 6-man tag team match tonight on Tuesday night on SmackDown. Jinder doesn't take the fall. Sami Zayn does. So it's
as he should.
That to me is yes, I agree with you 100%. It will be interesting to see where they go. But they've put a lot into him, and I think he's going to stick around. You know, he even got the carpet at the entrance at Clash of Champions. I mean, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely enjoyed what they did. There was another match right before that one at Clash of Champions, and that was, of course, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura with two special guest referees in Shane
mm-hmm.
McMahon and Daniel Bryan. And everyone and their brother thought this match was going to go on last. And I didn't think so because it was Clash of Champions. I thought a title match should go on last. And a lot of people on the Twitter, when that the video package starts rolling and it's a tag match, were actually complaining because they said the tag match had the best build and deserved to be in the main event. Where did you stand on that? Or sit, probably.
It wasn't sitting. It wasn't a main event match, in my opinion.
No.
Like straight up. And it's not about the performers. Before people go off about, I'm not saying that the performers involved in the match weren't main eventers. I'm saying that the type of match they were building, sure, fine build, wonderful build, not the main event of a pay-per-view.
Right. I agree
with
you.
It's just 100%. Or whatever we call WWE Network shows now. And so I was perfectly fine with where it was placed. You know, that could have been a middle-of-the-show match. To be honest, and it would have been fine. And then you give yourself a little bit of an ebb and a flow to the show too, because that's kind of like a little peak before you do another valley, and then get back up for that main event. But that's not a main event match in my opinion. Like it's not. If I were the booker, I wouldn't have made it the main event. I think it was perfectly fine as the penultimate event. Our penultimate match of the card. And so it's okay, kids, that your match, which got plenty of time to tell its story and to continue and further the plot that is going to go all the way through WrestleMania, it got its time and it was fine. And, you know, good on good on SmackDown, good on Sami Zayn, good on Kevin Owens, good on Daniel Bryan, good on Shane McMahon. We'll be okay.
Wow. Did you just praise Shane McMahon?
I don't hate Shane McMahon. I just don't want to see him jump off of cages every day. Like, I don't really need to see him wrestle anymore. I'm horrified, and I know you are too. I'm horrified at the thought that they would consider doing Shane versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania as just the two of them in a match.
Begging
for danger.
Yeah.
Six-man tag,
and that's where I think they're going to go. I think we're going to see a tag team,
yes,
six-man tag, and I don't know who else is going to be in there. But, yeah, it's funny because I can't – and maybe that's where Jinder comes into play. Maybe it's Jinder, Orton, and Shane. Who knows? And you've got – and on the other side, you've got Sammy, Kevin, and Daniel Bryan. No, because – first of all, and we've said it before on this show, going back into the fall, we kind of came to the realization that Daniel Bryan was going to wrestle again. And I said, if he wrestles again, it's going to be for the WWE. And it should be, because they're going to take better care of him than anybody. And they're going to take, you know, and he's going to be in a safer position. But the person you should get in the ring with to be in a safer position is not Shane McMahon. And that's my fear. Like, don't put him in there with Shane. You know, Triple H, great. You know, even AJ Styles, whoever you want. But
Orton. I'd put him in there.
Yeah, Orton. And not only that, if people, you know, are willing to be fair about it, Orton and Daniel Bryan had great chemistry. They put on some great matches
absolutely.
A few years ago. So there's no reason to not go that way either. But this match to me, like, it was – there's four amazing performers in the match, and it had nothing to do with them in the end. It was all about Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. And
very much
to
so.
Me, like, that was my biggest complaint about Survivor Series – was the order of the last two matches, because they did the Raw versus SmackDown 5-on-5 match with all the Triple H shenanigans last. If you put AJ versus Brock on last, I think the card goes over better. And
I would agree with that.
The main event is what you go home remembering. It's like watching a UFC pay-per-view. If the main event sucks, the event's not as good as it probably really was. If the main event's great, you might look at the event in a greater light than the entire card was as a casual viewer. And so I think they got it right with Clash of Champions and putting on the one-on-one match. And the great thing I liked about that match, well, first of all, the contrast, because the tag match was just so all over the place. It was not, to me, a good match. I didn't enjoy it because it was really all about Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. Conversely,
very much
you have this title match. Oh, go ahead.
No, just very much so. Like, you've hit it on the head. Like, the tag match was never about the four wrestlers involved.
Right, which is terrible. And when we flip it around, the title match was about the title. And everything these guys did, working the body parts, the Singh Bros, all that stuff, was all about that world championship. And to me, like, that's – even Brock Lesnar, when he's out there, it's more about the Beast than it is about the Universal Championship sometimes. And on SmackDown –
People have lamented – about title belts not being important. But you know what I mean? Like, you've seen it. Like, I've seen articles written about it. I've lamented about it on this show. You know, the value that people put on the Intercontinental title and lament about how it's not treated, or the U.S. title, let alone our, you know, and then our world titles. You can't win for losing, man.
I agree with you 100%. And they've made the WWE Championship important while Jinder Mahal had it. And, you know, we've talked about it before. It's funny. This topic came up on another show, and not ours, with the Intercontinental Championship. And The Miz did such a great job elevating the Intercontinental Championship, where you flip it over to the SmackDown, and Baron Corbin didn't do shit with the United States Championship. And looking at that comparison, I came to one conclusion. And that's that because the world championship is a world championship. And so it has built-in importance just because it's the world championship. And going back to the tag match versus the main event, and how the tag match had the better build to Clash of Champions than the main event, because the tag match needed a better build. It was a more intricate story, whereas the main event was about the title. It was an easy build. And you didn't have to go deep into detail like you did with the other one. But I look at these mid-card championships and I think about the build. And to me, I think the key to a successful mid-card championship on either Raw or SmackDown is a mid-card champion, because the Miz can talk. And he made that championship important. And Roman Reigns,
absolutely,
I'm sorry, can talk and has found his voice in that ring. Baron Corbin cannot. And it's funny because someone was like, well, what do you do? How do you make the United States Championship the same level as the Intercontinental Championship? And shockingly, you know who was suggested? Jinder Mahal was suggested by this host for the United States Championship because he would make it seem important. And that says a lot to me in what people see about it. I don't want to make this about Jinder again, but it's about that mid-card title you need to talk.
And you look at the other two competitors that were in that triple threat match last night. Both of them could talk better than Corbin. I will not sit here and tell you that Dolph Ziggler is, you know, I was surprised when Dolph won it. Not like floored surprise, but I was like, okay. you know what I mean? I was like, okay. But he's running with a gimmick well enough that he can be, he can be the champ that he wants to be in that gimmick, and it'll work fine. But he has the ability to talk. I personally, and I'm okay with him not winning it, but I would have loved to have seen Bobby Roode be the champ, because I think that would have been, to be cliche, it would have been glorious. And he would have talked, because he can talk and he can do a great job with it. And he would have made that championship run feel like a big deal. And I think he will. Like, I think that title is coming to him at some point. It's a win, not an if.
I agree. It's funny because you talk about that, and Dolph Ziggler, when he got put in the triple threat match, he went on Twitter and legitimately said, I don't know why I'm in this match. Why am I even in this match? There's no reason for me to be in this match. And everyone was like, Ziggler wants to retire, whatever. They didn't realize that was a storyline tweet. Because here we fast forward to SmackDown. Dolph Ziggler walks out of the ring, cuts a promo about how he didn't deserve to be in that match, drops the United States Championship in the center of the ring, and leaves. And now we don't know. Did he vacate the title? Is he abandoning the title?
What did he do?
Is he just making a statement? What's going on? But
suddenly we care about the title.
It all fits in with the story. Right. But it all fits in with the story. And maybe we do a tournament now. And it's going to bridge the gap because we got a long time between Clash of Champions and the Royal Rumble. Who knows, but it's just interesting because here we are again, and people are telling it in a story. And again, people want it to be real, but really Dolph Ziggler was working you the whole time. That's what he does.
It's funny, by the way, because we're not spoiler-free, so you spoiled that for me because I had not watched SmackDown yet.
Sorry.
So I just totally went along with what you just said. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, go to thechairshot.com and read Stephen Mitchell's report. That's where you'll see it. But
the very next thing that I see is speculation on Dolph Ziggler possibly relinquishing the U.S. title.
Right.
Photos.
They got to build intrigue. We got like 6 weeks until Royal Rumble. We gotta build that and make it work until we get there. So it's just interesting where we are right now, and I feel like we're getting to this point again. You can kind of see us figuring everything out, and a lot of other people aren't. So. Interesting where we are.
Yeah.
Before we get... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you. Just saying, yep.
Before we get to the next discussion, Patrick, that I want to debut our brand new segment because I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited
about it. You've been talking about it for weeks, so...
I have. So, we used to have a focus on this show on Dolph Ziggler, and we had the Ziggler tracker. And
we did.
We would see what was going on with Dolph Ziggler, and we had to abandon it because it just wasn't going so well. And we
did not help his career at all.
No, we didn't help him one bit. Sorry, Dolph Ziggler. We weren't very helpful to you whatsoever. But he eventually found his way into title matches and some other things, and stuff worked out that way, and now he's maybe possibly the United States champion again. Who knows? And then for a while, we were kind of tracking the trajectory of
Dean fucking Ambrose.
But let's be honest, that was all just about the soundbite. That really was about that really.
And
cool
and 0-for-2 on the furthering of the careers.
That's right.
We,
so
We've done poor job, Trey. We should have had a Roman Reigns tracker back when I said he had an
right?
It factor. That you give credit to the wrong
exactly.
person every time we talk about it.
Yeah, Andy Critchell came up with that. I know. Everyone knows this.
That is fucking asshole. You better not point that shit out either.
No, of course not. We don't do post-production. This show is live to tape, my friend. We don't come back and do anything. So we are now going to follow along the career, right after losing a title, of one Baron Corbin. So are you ready for how we're going to do this, Patrick O'Dowd?
I'm interested to see how we're running this segment. Let's do it.
All right, let's find out right now. This will be a weekly thing, by the way, everybody. Every single week, we're going to track the career of Baron Corbin.
It's time for another edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
Baron Corbin sucks.
Yes.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
Tune in next week for the next edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
So, I gotta ask, why? Is it because Abyss doesn't work for SmackDown?
Maybe he's my new Abyss. Baron Corbin sucks. That's why.
Dude, have you seen him live? Because he sucks live too. But I just, you know.
I bet he does. You know how I feel about that segment, though. You know how I feel about that segment.
Glorious.
That's how I feel about that segment. No. The segment itself is glorious. There we go. That's better.
Yeah, we gotta be careful with We got to be careful with, you know, pushing Bobby Roode too much. We don't want to hurt that career. All
right? That's right. We got to leave Bobby Roode alone.
Keep Bobby out of it. He's on a roll. We can't back that horse.
No, we cannot back that horse. In fact, if we back that horse, then Bobby Roode might call up Big John.
I'd actually like to take this opportunity to wish
Greg DeMarco Show
best in all his future endeavors.
Oh, dear.
No, we can't have that. We cannot have that. Not at all. So I want to go back to Monday Night Raw because they're in the final segment of Raw. There was a big brawl. All the women were fighting. And out comes Stephanie McMahon. And I still look at her as Stephanie McMahon Helmsley. It's just a thing for me. And she comes out. And what does she tell the women, Patrick O'Dowd? What does she inform them of?
I'm assuming you're talking about the first ever Women's Royal Rumble match taking place in the Royal Rumble.
Of course, yes. The first ever Women's Royal Rumble. An announcement that I'm very happy about. Something that we talked about on this show. The internet told us that it wasn't going to happen even after Absolution came up and the Riot Squad came up. By the way, when the Riot Squad and Absolution came up, we here on the show told you it was because of the Women's Royal Rumble. Everyone said, it's not because of that reason. Trust me, I watched Sarah Bridges talk. That's why she's on the main roster. She's on the main roster because of the Women's Royal Rumble, let's be honest. Becky Lynch was not lying when she talked about Liv Morgan's abilities. It's it is what it is. They're there because of the Women's Royal Rumble. Paige is not there because of the Women's Royal Rumble. And Mandy Rose is making the most of her opportunity, as is Ruby Riott and Sonya Deville. It's just the other two that I'm not so much into. And it's great, and I love the fact that we have a Women's Royal Rumble. I'm excited about it. It's about time. I hope that they do over the top rope, and there's some speculation they're going to do through the rope eliminations just because of the physical nature of taking that bump. Who knows? We'll figure all that stuff out later. But good announcement. Do you have any problems with the announcement, Patrick Riddell?
No, not at all. And furthermore, I have no problem with the way it was done and portrayed and responded to. So, because I'm sure we're going to get into that as well.
That's where I have a problem. So,
let it go.
Why in the world? No. I can't let it go. It's like you calling CM Punk Phil on the air a couple weeks ago. I will not let it go.
Hey, you
just
did it.
And Nia Jax comes out and they're all fighting. And why do we just stop when Stephanie McMahon comes out? Like why is. I know we're trying to make her out to be the female Vince and all of that, but it's like they just suddenly stop. Okay, so that's fine. They stop, and Stephanie McMahon makes the announcement. Then we all stand in a line and do the yes chant and raise our arms in triumphant victory. And we were just fighting not that long ago. And I do have a problem with it. Like, that makes no sense to me. Like, yes, it's a victory, but it's not like these women walked around for weeks asking for this match on television. It's not like the Divas Revolution, as they called it at the time, was something they were actually asking for, and then it happened. Furthermore, why in the hell is Absolution celebrating with the other women? Like they attack these women brutally, tried to get rid of them, and now all of a sudden we're celebrating together?
Yeah, for one segment.
Yeah, but that one segment is the closing moment of the show.
Yeah, and this is where it hurts because you're worried so much about a storyline in a soap opera for guys instead of recognizing that the WWE wanted the shot of everybody holding hands at the end in the ring. So they got the shot they wanted, and, you know, it's because go fuck yourself, that's why. Like, that's the answer as to why they did it that way, because they don't care. And that's why I'm not bothered by it. Like, the reason I'm not bothered by it is because they were more interested in putting together a shot and sort of, quote-unquote, this, like, feel-good moment for these women's wrestlers that, you're right, doesn't have any sort of build, does not make sense in the context of what was going on in the ring. But what they were trying to do there was argue that this is one of the, and maybe, you know, maybe they could have pulled it off better. I absolutely agree with that. But the argument is that this was something that was more important in kind of the scope of women's wrestling versus what they were doing in the ring, what they were fighting over in that moment. Now, I do agree that, you know, it looked goofy or whatever, but, like, it didn't bug me. Like, I didn't, like, you got all rage all over it. Like, whatever. Like, I'm not going to get mad about it. They had a very much an idea of what they wanted to end the show with, how they wanted to close the show, what kind of image they wanted to close the show. The only thing that might have been nice is have them do that play nice moment and then have, you know, them turn on everybody again and just start it up afterwards and maybe clear the ring when it's done or something like that. But
Right. Whatever,
like, it's, to me, it's not about that. It's about the fact that, you know, we've had how many Royal Rumbles, and we're finally, you know, being like, okay, women, you know, the women can have this match. And you know, for what it's worth, like, it while it's a nice thing that's happening, good Lord, this could have happened so long ago. You know, talent.
It could, not as long ago as you think, because they didn't have the depth talent-wise.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you've seen the WWE itself didn't have the talent depth-wise 1 year to pull off a decent Royal Rumble. And
that's true.
They still, you know, and what they did, the way that they managed that. And, maybe you're right in that it couldn't have been that long ago because maybe they didn't want to do the outreach to pull in some of the talent. But you could have pulled talent out of Mexico and Japan and you know, a few other folks to do the Royal Rumble with, you know, some independent talent, stuff like that. And, you know, fans, you know, most casuals know about 4 women on the roster. It was the same thing with the WWE at that time. Like, you know about 4 or 5 people, but nobody knows when Curt Hawkins goes out there to get thrown over the top rope. That's who it is. So, you know, yes, but no. Like, they could have done it sooner. I'm okay with it. I don't think they could have done it in the 80s or the early 90s, but I think, you know, in the late 90s to early 2000s, there was enough women out there wrestling that they could have done it.
There was enough women out there wrestling, but I don't think there was enough. Like, you can't have more than half the field to be people from outside the company.
I think they could have swung it. I don't think you need 30 people either. You don't need to do a 30-person rumble. What if you do 20? What if you do, you know, you could have... Like, the first Royal Rumble only had 20 competitors. It's okay.
Yeah, that's true. It also wasn't the main event of the show. That was the Islanders versus the Young Stallions. So.
And one of the Stallions got hurt.
That's true.
I think Roma got.
That is true.
Roma get hurt? Roma got really hurt. He was.
Yeah, I think it was Roma. I think you're right. They got really hurt.
Look at that old school. Look at that old school pull right there, everybody.
Well, of course. I mean, this is you we're talking about here. Of course you knew that. Like, that should surprise no one. whatsoever who's ever spent any time listening to you.
That reminds me. Now that we're in Royal Rumble season, I got to start watching them all from the first one through. It's my thing.
Yeah, that's right. You got to do the first run. Got to see everybody who's getting announced. So there was an interesting take that I saw today that someone, they weren't upset that there was a Women's Royal Rumble. They were upset that we are going to now watch the Royal Rumble pay-per-view and have two Royal Rumble matches on it. And they don't like the fact that there's going to be two Royal Rumble matches on it, which kind of brings me back to the thematic pay-per-view conversation, because when you've got multiple Hell in a Cell matches, and then not this year, but in the past, the different TLC theme matches part of the TLC pay-per-view. And now next year, we of course are going back to the co-branded Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And you and I have not really had a chance to talk about that too much on this show, but the co-branded Money in the Bank pay-per-view, I'll be honest with you. I liked Money in the Bank being specific to one brand. And I think that it made it different. And I kind of liked it when, you know, I figured it would rotate between brands like the other pay-per-views. And so I want to propose something to you, Patrick O'Dowd, and see what you think of it. And then then we'll take it from there. So we're kind of just making this up as we go along here. It wasn't even on our list of things we were going to talk about. But so looking at what we can propose here, we've got a co-branded Money in the Bank pay-per-view. What I am going to propose is that we take Money in the Bank, give it to one brand. This year was SmackDown, next year it could be Raw. And the other alternating pay-per-view that goes along with it is the King of the Ring. Your thoughts?
I can live with that. I don't really know that I have much more to expound upon that, Greg. I'm sorry, man. Like, I think that's a perfectly fine idea and works just fine. Like, I don't care as much as you did about whether or not it became co-branded or not, but I do like the idea of something being, you know, unique to that brand and only that brand. I think that it does. And, you know, we talk so much about how similar the shows are. That having a couple of those elements that are unique to that brand each year can give it that show a flavor and a shot that's a little bit different than the other, and maybe entices people to watch both shows as opposed to tuning out on Tuesdays by however many million people it is. So
yeah,
I think that's actually quite a fine idea, Greg, and very much worth exploring. And you should write a letter.
Or an article, because the letter's not going to get
You do write an article, yeah. Get behind your keyboard, keyboard warrior.
It's funny, because I thought about writing that article. Well, I thought about a different article. And so I had a backup idea. Not even a backup idea.
Yep.
Idea number two, that's not quite as easy to bite into as Money in the Bank and King of the Ring. So we recently, not that long ago, had the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Raw versus SmackDown, you know, there was people had some different issues with it. Some of the matches were good, some weren't, this and that, and people, you know, not fully sold on champion versus champion, especially with the world champion, this and that. So what I wanted to suggest, even back then, and I was going to write this article but didn't because I was too busy relaunching the website and didn't have an opportunity to actually put it together, was, and this is a little crazier, I'll be honest with you, but given the size of the rosters and the way they're split and the fact that Raw has the cruiserweight, take the Survivor Series pay-per-view and give it to Raw. Make Survivor Series a Raw-specific pay-per-view and then give King of the Ring to SmackDown. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like it.
Why not?
I don't like it. I know that the Big Five don't exist anymore, so I will establish that. And even in based on what you're sharing, I actually like the idea of the Survivor Series being the brand versus brand show. I don't like the champion versus champion part of the show. I think the champions should be captains of the Raw and SmackDown teams. And that there should be some. I do think that there should be something that Raw and SmackDown are wrestling for. And like, I would rather retool the story that it needs to be done to build Survivor Series as opposed to making it a, you know, sort of Raw exclusive show. And so, like, I think it could work, sure. But yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm not feeling that one as much.
It's hard. I know it's hard to give up SmackDown being or Survivor Series being a co-branded pay-per-view. And it's a crazy idea. I just think it works better from a storyline perspective with one brand. You can put the matches together. You can do the cruiserweight one with Raw. You can even throw an NXT one if you really wanted to. Plus, you have Battleground. And Battleground, kind of, just by the name of the event, is to me, strikes. And at one point it was Raw versus SmackDown. And you could take Battleground, make that your December pay-per-view, make it brand versus brand because it's so hard to promote in December anyway with everything else going on, and put that number 30 spot in the Royal Rumble or something else on the line, or maybe a draft pick as well, and do that too. Like, there are things you can do to think outside the box, but we've really pigeonholed ourselves into just a straight, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Like, I'll be honest with you, I wanted Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn to lose at Clash of Champions because I thought it was a better story. And them trying to hijack things and maybe coming out and attacking people in the Royal Rumble, showing up in NXT. Like, wouldn't that be fun? They just randomly show up in NXT because they're fired and they're just trying to have fun now and do whatever. Like, you could actually have told an interesting story, and I feel like, you know, obviously it's a playlist. It's not on my playlist. It's not what they were, you know, they're booking something else, and I get that. But I just feel like we're taking the easy way out sometimes. And sometimes the easy way is okay, but other times I feel the easy way is not okay.
Fair enough. You know, the other thing is I also do wonder, and this would, you know, probably would give more strength. Why do we even need any sort of pay-per-view that is a Raw versus SmackDown sort of pay-per-view at this point anymore? Seriously, like, why do we ever need to bring that element into play? And you talk about lowest common denominator, you know, because it's always the little brother show trying to,
right,
you know, show up big brother. And so that's kind of the inherent
problem.
Even though
in this case, it's big brother trying to show up little sister, but that's okay.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, the inherent problem with trying to do Raw versus SmackDown is everybody always acknowledges that SmackDown is the lesser show, no matter what.
Right, and SmackDown needs to win, and so far they haven't.
And so every time you do this, people always predict that SmackDown's going to go over because they think that it's somehow going to give a good push to SmackDown. There's never going to be a good push to SmackDown. So, you know, maybe the real solution here is that there just doesn't need to be any brand versus brand pay-per-views, really.
Right.
You know.
And see, I like the brand versus brand pay-per-view only because you've got these two distinct brands, and it was set up to be Shane versus Stephanie in the beginning, and so it makes sense. But that's a topic we're at the table for when we have more time. I think it's a good topic to explore in the future, and one that we can definitely put on the list. Kind of like the topic of the Usos and the tag teams that we're not going to have enough time to talk about today, which I know. Mm-hmm. We're going right back to when we had tag team wrestling on our rundown for like 6 weeks straight and until we talked about it. So,
you know what?
We can
table tag team wrestling every week. We'll find a day. We'll find time.
Of course you will.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. The clock is ticking and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes and we're out.
Patrick O'Dowd, this past weekend, Ring of Honor did something that people normally shit on them about, and they did something that no one really expected. They played the hot hand and had Cody Rhodes lose the Ring of Honor World Championship to Dalton Castle.
They did. I was,
they pulled the trigger.
I sent you the tweet. Or I sent you a DM in Twitter that was like, Dalton Castle. How about that?
Yeah, Dalton fucking Castle. I know. It was a great point.
Yeah, really was so ho-hum about Final Battle. And I didn't watch it. You know, I'll own that. I didn't pay the money to watch the pay-per-view. But sure shooting was excited and happy. Even if it's a brief, you know, glimpse of a title run and Cody gets it back shortly or something like that. Good on them. because I think it's okay, ROH fans, to do that, or, you know, to do that every now and again, or, you know, maybe like the first time ever.
Well, I mean, remember when Eddie Edwards won the world title from Roderick Strong? Like, that was a surprise title win.
That was
as well. I think it really freshens things up. Freshens things up going into 2018 for Ring of Honor, because with Cody as champion, there was a whole lot of foregone conclusion going on. And with Cody as champion, the push of Bullet Club, everything else, and now it's like, whoa, wait, Dalton Castle did what? And it just surprises a lot of people. And I kind of like the shakeup, because for me, I had always been asking the question, what happens after Bullet Club? What would you do without Bullet Club? And Ring of Honor is kind of proving, I don't think they're out to prove they don't need Bullet Club, because they've had their best year ever, and it's been largely thanks to Cody Rhodes and Bullet Club. But they've proven that they can do other things and not put the spotlight. Like the Young Bucks have not, you know, they've been out of the tag team title picture since losing the belts. And that's only the six-man tag team titles. Now Cody loses that belt. Silas Young is the Ring of Honor World Television Champion. Like, what? Like another, you know, Greg DeMarco show alumnus. Silas Young is now your Ring of Honor World Television Champion. Scorpio Sky is now in a faction with Frankie Kazarian and Christopher Daniels. Like, things very interesting. They're definitely not as hesitant as they used to be. We're going to have a Women of Honor champion in 2018, finally. Like, we talked to Joe Koff about that well over a year ago on this program, and here we are. Finally, they did their due diligence. They felt like they had to do, and now we've got Women of Honor champion coming up. So I give credit to Ring of Honor, like a company long criticized for being so slow to pull the trigger. Here we are pulling triggers, Patrick O'Dowd, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I think it's freshening up the product in a way that can really benefit a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if there was always a complaint about ROH, is that they were kind of predictable and stale. So keep doing what you're doing, ROH.
You know, the long-term TV tapings and everything lends itself to it, and here's where we are now, and I'm very excited to see where it goes. And as far as you and I go, that does it for another week, Patrick O'Dowd. We're an hour in, and we're done for this week again. These 57-minute shows fly by, dude. It's crazy.
It is. It's unbelievable how quick that works out.
Maybe next week we'll get your tag team discussion in. Maybe we won't wait quite so long as we did last time.
We'll keep the dream
get on. Get it in this time. We'll find out. But otherwise, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Greg DeMarco Show. Remember, always use your head. And remember, Baron Corbin sucks.
Makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Man, is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties.
Shut your dumb mouth.